today is the last Sunday talk. I just wanted to encourage you to be part of this inquiry in this topic. It's a big topic, and we can only cover a small amount of this theme. And so I would like to encourage you to really not just be a passive receiver of what I say, but also some ways participate in this inquiry. So the energy of mindfulness can inform the space here. Knowing one's limit, going beyond one's limit. This is such an enormous subject, it's almost difficult to know where to begin. Except that we know that from very early age we have a sense that somehow this world is not the whole thing. I think from early age one has an intimation that what we are part of is much bigger than this mind, this body, what the conditioning, the education we receive, even the nationality we're part of, the country, the culture we're part of. And it's not always obvious that limits are limits. We don't really see them as limits. We tend to feel the malaise of this limits, but we don't really know what's going on, what's happening. Just being born in a body, that's pretty clear of the limits of our life. Being born in a body that has six senses, that has a brain and some neurons in there that are activating your perceptions and your way of thinking and feeling and so on. And so just being in this body is setting up a whole world of limits and limitations, which are the limits we impose on ourselves. So those limits are experienced as a kind of malaise, a kind of not quite knowing what to do with them. We are born into a culture. We are born as a man or as a woman. We are born into this life as a human beings. And we then we are also part of the cycle of nature. We're born, we grow up, we turn into adulthood, and then we grow old, and then eventually or what we could consider our biggest limit is that we die, which is not eternal, at least physically. Our body dies. That's pretty scary, isn't it? We're born into this world and not knowing why, where we came from, what happened before, why we got born, and we don't know where we're going, what's going to happen when the biggest limit of our life takes place, which is when we die. We really don't know what will be the outcome, even though many people ask and wonder, you know, will I continue after death as I am now, or will I be going to some special heavens, or will I turn into a toad, or will I can I be with my dog, or after rarely can I be with my husband or my wife, but we don't mind having limits as long as they kind of eventually take us to what we love and cherish. And as far as we are concerned, this physical limits that we are part of is not foreign to us, is it? As we passed 50, into the 40s, into the 50s, into the 60s, we realize that there is definitely boundaries that we have to abide by, and there are we can't really go beyond them so easily. That's very frightening, because there is in us a definite kind of sense that we are quite boundless, we are free, some level. We are not bound by time, or bound by nature, or bound by this physical world, bound by our mind. You know, it's very difficult to really hold these two paradoxes of one level we are we can't go beyond certain things, at another level we have also this knowledge that we are not bound by anything. You know, there are certain things that are very important to take on board which are perhaps superimposing limits on the already limited life that we have. Like our culture, the religion we follow. And then, as some of you know, when you come to the place where you decide to follow a spiritual path, there is a certain discipline that is necessary to journey on this path. So there are limits that takes us beyond them, and there are limits that keep imprisoning us into their fold. In the path of practice, we discovered that the biggest obstacle to our freedom, or that which takes us beyond limits, is a mind that is not understanding itself, not knowing itself, not skilled in handling itself. So a lot of this feeling of being bound has to do with a lack of skills or lack of understanding, which is the same thing. We know a lot. We've been educated. We have a lot of accumulated knowledge. And our greatest prison, you could say, are this identification we have with this knowledge that has been accumulated over years of education and book learning and so on, and experiences as well. And we're quite good at accumulating things. We have a hard time letting them go. So we find ourselves after a little while piled up under vast amount of little cubicles called thoughts, ideas, views. And somebody sent me an email recently from France, in fact it was my younger sister, about the brain. And you'll be very reassured if you have very strong opinions and view about things, which limits your perspective on life, or at least get you into trouble with the rest of the world. And that apparently the brain has to form a view and opinion is quite hard work. And the amount of work, in fact, to change one's view and opinion is so vast, the amount of neuron that has to be created just to change, to shift one's view. The reason why we use these views and opinions is because that's a way for the mind to rest and keeps energy. That's reassuring, isn't it? It's not our fault, really. It's just the brain, it just doesn't know what to do. it needs rest as well, so it might as well cling to old views and opinions, which are really the walls of our limits, the walls of our prison. They don't seem like that a lot of the time, do they? It's part of being educated, intelligent, confident, and socially able to have the capacity to share one's view, being articulate, confident. If you're not stubborn with a view, you might just be simply walked over. And this is frightening. I'll just be a doormat. I've got to hang on to my world view. Otherwise, he or she is going to trample me. So there is a little bit there's quite a bit of at stake. Our world might be threatened by the possibility of losing, bringing down the walls of our brains, resting places. So it's not as simple as you imagine it is. It's not, you know, people that are impatient and want to kind of be free straight away. They want their mind to be boundless and completely open and receptive to everything and able to flow with life, to not hurt anybody, to not contend with anyone. But then nature is very powerful. And you can see in nature, I mean, I just had a picture, somebody showed me a living kind of a kind of video, you could say, of a crocodile coming out of its eggs. You know, this huge, nasty-looking crocodile, this little baby just kind of poking the, and they kind of going, just kind of pushing their out of the eggs shell. It's quite sweet. And suddenly I thought, nature has a lot of limits, and we have a way of going beyond quite naturally, by the fact that we just, from babyhood, we grow into this mature, well, not so mature, teenager, and then adult and so on. There's a lot of things going on beyond our control in terms of growth and breaking down the past, breaking down the natural process. But when we really look closely, certainly when I look closely at what made me very uncomfortable in this world, despite extremely pleasant conditions externally, so my limits were not particularly the physical world, it was this inability to be alive all the time, because I did not want to be alive half of the time, to feel alive as a natural state. So within the realm of limits, you can see that there is this, you know, the fear of falling asleep, the fear of shutting down, the fear of closing down on ourselves and unable to benefit from the blessings of this life, unable to really respond to life wholeheartedly from a place of freedom, from a place of selflessness. And that certainly was a word that spoke to me many years ago, as I was becoming more and more aware that my greatest limitation, my prison, you could say, was my own self-identity, my sense of being who I think I was, or who I felt I was, who I perceived myself to be. Even though it was quite a nice perception, being French, you know, it's not a bad perception, really. Lots of good things about being French. Being a dancer, that seemed to be okay. fitted well in my kind of aesthetic world. Yet there was incredible dissatisfaction about, for me, there was a sense of not being happy by the fact that I could not understand what this life was about. I couldn't understand why I was so frightened about nothing. And it was like not being paranoid. I didn't feel I was yet. I met paranoia later on, as you train in the monastic life. That's when you encounter your paranoia states. But at the time I was quite oblivious of that, and I was just aware that, you know, even though life was great at some level, there was a lot of perception about the future. And I knew somehow that the future didn't exist except what you make of it in this moment. So this is our greatest limit. It's this belief in unreality, this belief in something, this assumption that we know something that is not real. And we know it's not real, yet we keep recreating a conviction in ourselves that what is real, what is unreal, is real. We're stuck with that. Very solid. And as I started meditating, I noticed that the thing that was sort of most solid in myself was this sense of this identification with me. And me is not just a personality. You know, we tend to you know, as we become Buddhists, people start hating themselves because they realize they've got a personality. They've got an ego. So they start really thinking they should do something terrible to this ego because it's in the way. But it's not in the way, it's your path. It's your path to liberation. So I have to be very clear on that. So the limits that we create are not, it's not the personality, it's our stupidity. These are the limits. This is where we are. We have this predicament of making something that is unreal totally solid. When you begin to look at yourself from the place of mindfulness, from a place of wakefulness, then there is a fluidity to your personality which is not possible to meet when you're frightened. In fact, the most solid things in ourselves is fear. As long as we are frightened, as long as we are creating a fearful future, as long as we are identifying with those thoughts, then we are creating, we are building a reality that is limited. How do we go beyond that? You can see how in our world, this wish to go beyond limits is very, very powerful. You can see that in a competitive world of sports, of all the great magnificent sort of triumphs of the human body over nature. And you know, I was reading recently, not just in sport and in mountaineering, climbing mountains and going to the moon and all that sort of thing, but I was reading recently that now there is a new science, I think, which has got a funny name. It's got something called nanoscience, and you can actually start looking at matter in terms of, I think there's 10,000 nano something in a tenth of an inch. And you can start, you're able to look through that and find out how matter behaves. But this funny thing is that in science, as we go along, we realize there's nothing there. anyway. Strange, isn't it? So all these limits that we experience, actually, when under the microscopes, there's nothing there. And yes, I feel very solid, and this chair feels very solid too. It's not an illusion at some level. And this is where perhaps the Buddhist teaching is quite useful in the way it presents two realities. It's not just one reality, the ultimate reality is where there's neither me, nor you, nor him, nor her. There's neither short nor long. There's neither finite or infinite. There's neither moon or sun, earth or wind or anything. This is a description, my own interpretation, my own kind of translation of this amazing passage in the Buddhist teaching, in which the Buddha described, in one of the few instances in which the Buddha describes the what Nibbana is. This is the end of suffering. Another moon or sun or anything that we know basically exists. But on the conventional level, it's a paradox, and I like to talk about these paradoxes on the spiritual path, on the journey to liberation, because it's very difficult to put those things together, to know that going beyond limits, go through the doorway of accepting limits. If you don't accept limits, you can never go beyond them. And that's when we really need to mature, because we can't stand at some level to be limited. We don't want to be limited. We resent having a body. We resent getting old. We resent getting sick. We resent that. We can really get angry with ourselves, not to mention other people. We can be so impatient with other people tottering around and not really getting things done properly. There's a great part of not being able to go beyond our limits is through this kind of aversion we have, this relationship we have to limits, which is very unhealthy. Even though it seems healthy to resent them, we're not very, in terms of dealing with limitations, we're not very good. We tend to react to them very badly. We tend to respond to them in the way that perpetuate them, or in the way that increase suffering. I haven't used the word suffering much yet. If you really want to know where you're limited, just check out the amount of suffering you're going through now. Because we're still waiting for life to give us exactly what we want, don't we? This is a pattern. We are still waiting for Godot, aren't we? When will he come? Waiting for the right thing to turn up one day, with the right body, the right job, the right partner, the right cat, dogs. The right teacher. The right weather. That's a bad joke to be born in England, isn't it? You're still looking for the right weather. Although I really like myself, the weather in England. I'm quite attached to it, actually. I noticed. I like, it's very diverse, and you never know in the morning what you're going to end up in the evening with. It's kind of exhilarating. You can't really say, oh God, another sunny day, and you know it's going to be there for the next 6 months, like when I was in America recently. You know that when the sunny day started, then it will be there for at least 6 months with not a cloud and 104 temperature. At least here you can say, I don't know. Maybe it'll be like this or maybe not. So included in the fact that we have a hard time dealing with these limits by ignoring them, pushing them under the carpet, blaming somebody for them. It's because of her that I can't get this right, because of me. I'm so stupid that I can't exist. I don't allow myself to exist. I think England is good for that. I'm sorry. So, how do we relate to whatever is impeding me from feeling totally free, boundless, fearless? There are no two ways. There are not many ways, unfortunately. And that's probably at the time when we suddenly are completely, completely desperate about anything, that we suddenly hit our limits and go beyond it. Either we go beyond it or we just destroy ourselves. So when you stumble across something that is an obstacle for you that seems like a limit, it's very important to see the signs of possibilities. Most of the time we read things in a very primitive way. We see black, we think, oh, that's black. That can't be green or yellow, black. You know. Because we're stuck on perception, we're stuck on the screen of our mind without being able to see beyond the space of the present moment. We can't see, the mind tends to be limited when we identify with it. It is our limits. You can't deal by avoiding. You can't deal with limits by avoiding them. They are there to teach you something. But aren't we stubborn in thinking that our limits are obstacles? Aren't we stubborn to think that what I find difficult, what imprisons me, what gives me the sense of being limited, is a problem? This has been my learning. For 25 years, I'm still stubborn. Still see the resistance to want to learn, even though I do learn. But I can still feel those resistance to not see life as a challenge. That's going to take me beyond my limits. That's going to lead me towards experiencing, you know, limitlessness, freedom. And you can see, for example, as a monk or a nun in this Buddhist tradition, or any other tradition for that matter, you can see any spiritual path goes through a certain amount of discipline. So you don't decrease the limits, you increase them. You tighten the bolts. It's like, okay, you really want to expand the limits? You really want to be conscious of them? Then we're going to make them a little stronger. We're going to go to that discipline. And many of us have trained in skills of one kind or another, whether it's academic skills or whether it's professional skills or whether it's any skills whatsoever requires a certain amount of discipline, doesn't it? Just to go to university, you need a discipline. Just to learn anything, you need to have the, you know, a certain training. And in our practice, there is a very clear training that is, could be seen as very limiting. In fact, many people interpret monastic life as a very limited world, you know, by which you abide by rules and regulations and routine and schedules and so on. And externally, it certainly may seem like that, because that's how it appears. But the aim of a discipline is not to make you more, to increase your prison, or to increase your the narrowness of your world. But on the contrary, it's there to make you really conscious of the already existing limited patterns of your mind. It's already there, but you don't see them unless you start training in some ways. And there's a terrific resistance to training, because emotionally we want to be free. Emotionally we want to be, you know, we want to love, we want to commune with the universe. We want a sense of communion. See, why do I have to have a training and, you know, do this and do that and do this and do that? But you have to realize that ignorance is a form of addiction. We are addicted, all of us. Didn't think you would hear this today, would you? As we know, if we really want to become free, we have to become conscious of what binds us. Unless you totally embrace your addiction with full confidence and acceptance, it's very difficult to go anywhere beyond that. Because as long as you refuse to see, as long as you refuse to acknowledge, you refuse to... And you know, those of you who've been in a situation or experiencing addictions, you know very well that you're the last person to know you are addicted. Isn't it true? Everybody else around you has noticed, but you're fine, as far as you're concerned. This is a human realm. Remember, we have the capacity to realize this for ourselves, and that goes through the recognition of suffering, that goes through the recognition of dukkha. And people sometimes mistake dukkha for the ordinary meaning of suffering, which is pretty kind of, it's a good enough meaning, but dukkha has a much wider, deeper meaning too, and it's another word for the pain of delusion, for the pain of identifying with a mind that is that sees things in a distorted way, that sees things in from a place of unreality, from that sees pleasant as unpleasant, unpleasant as pleasant, happy as miserable, and miserable as happy. We go really in a tangle, basically. It's becoming more global, in fact. More global news. We're all in a pretty messy situation. And this is not new. I think it's gone on probably from the beginning of time. It's just we have faster mediatic means. Little cartoons, which is called Garfield. I don't know if you know Garfield. The epitome of human delusion. It's brilliant because it really shows you who we are, how we are really. That's how we are. We're completely, totally oblivious of how we affect the world a lot of the time. And ourselves. So going back to discipline, this is, you could say, an imposition, a limit. And if I feel already limited and I have to put another limit on top of myself, how can I be free from limits? Sounds paradoxical. Well, it's not so paradoxical when you realize the mind is not bound by these things. In meditation, you begin to see the possibility of moving away, or actually not moving away, moving closer to the truth. You know? Moving closer to the realization that our mind is not limited by birth, by aging, by sickness, by views, opinions, by feelings, by moods, by emotions, by memories and so on. It's not bound by that. Yet how many of us live a very dissatisfying life, informed by the past, created by the past, molded by the past, anticipated by the past, and feared by past experience? These are the limits of our mind. So there is no escape, in a way, to those limits. You can't pretend, except by avoidance. We're quite good at that. We avoid reality. We avoid what is right in front of us. And we avoid seeing that we need help. Many of us are terrified to ask for help. Terrified to even need help. The thought that you might need other people to help you. Not to be free, because only you can do that to yourself. Only you can realize this. But to maybe help you to point out your limitations. This is when community's life is very helpful, when you live with other people. You can really know that. When I lived on my own, I could see my own limits, but it wasn't as brilliantly pointed out than when I live with other people. And if I really want to know my limits, then I go to my blood family. They are really wonderful teachers. When, you know, people here see you as nun and as a senior nun and as a this and that, so they're still sort of polite with you. You go to your blood family, your sister, and... But anyway, we have means to know for ourselves what is limiting us. We have means. The meditation practice that some of you have experienced, have practiced, have developed over the years, is there to look at the effects of those limits, to look at that, to take a good look. And it takes quite a bit of courage, actually, because it's so unpleasant. It's such a miserable thing to have to see yourself as this stupid, selfish, jealous, confused, fearful, helpless person. Because there is a possibility of identifying with any of those. So we create false realities. We do things to ourselves that make us believe that we are not part of this realm. You know, people start going and walk on hot coals and learn meditation and try to get psychic powers so they can go through walls and walk through air, walk on water, and go beyond the limits of their physical body. Particularly in the spiritual past, you find all sorts of people like that in some corners of the planet. So here we are with two legs, painful feet, painful knees, and big clunky body. Really frustrating, isn't it? We need resources, don't we? To find out our true nature, our true, capacity to be totally free, totally limitless, totally. And it, the Buddhist teaching is very clear. Anything you attach to, anything you cling to, anything you identify with is, that's your limit. Now, there's another aspect to limit that I don't want to forget. And beside the training of the mind that we use as a way of accepting our natural limits, our natural, accepting the fact that the ignorance is not taking us beyond limits, accepting the fact that we are not superhuman, There's also an aspect of limit which is important, because as long as we don't know ourselves, we don't know others. And when we don't know others, then we can easily create a lot of suffering for ourselves and others. And you probably have heard many times the word boundaries now in psychotherapeutic terms. Boundaries. Even though it's not the limits I've been talking about so far. And this word boundaries is a synonym of limits, you could say. But it's also a way of acknowledging our limits. People, human beings have a capacity to walk over each other very easily, not physically, but mentally and emotionally. If we walk over, if we walk over each other the way we do on an emotional level, on the psychological level, I think we'll be trampled probably by now. We'll be squashed into a flat thing on the ground. If I could be a cartoonist, I'd love to do a cartoon on that. How many times we just barge into people, hit them, squash them, and move away completely oblivious of what we've just been doing. Just been punching them, bashing them around. And so we need to know also that this term boundaries, or which is a synonym of limit, can be used in a very constructive way. Acknowledging what you can do and acknowledging what you can't do. Acknowledging how much you can take and how much you can't. Acknowledging how much you can accept in yourself and what you can't. It's part of knowing oneself. It's part of knowing our limitations. And it's very useful when it's not identified with. Again, this identification to any of our thinking process is what really is our downfall. But to be able to say to somebody, sorry, I can't take more than that. It's a way of creating boundaries of mutual self-respect. Of creating an artificial boundaries, because ideally, of course, we want to be able to do anything, to accept anything, to receive anything, to withstand anything, to bear anything. That's our ideals, and my goodness, how painful they are, how much havoc they create in our mind, these ideals. Probably our biggest prisons are ideals. Because even though ideals are wonderful pointers, they are inspiring guides, you know, they are not reality. Even though they may inform reality, but they may inform reality, but if they take us away from the here and now, the potential that is here and now, then those ideals are unnecessary. So a great part of the practice in the Buddhist path is to know how we are deluded by our ideals. I'm not saying that we should not have any ideals, but these ideals, when they become real in the sense of solid, then we're not with reality anymore. We're with the fantasy realm, an imagined realm. We are not in the realm of what is. A lot of our suffering is combining the simplicity of the here and now and staying in touch with the potential of our mind that is awake and present and open, boundless. So to be able to see that here and now I'm nothing and yet my mind is everything, you know. Because we think we are nothing in the present moment, we can drag everything we can remember to kind of fill up the bank account, you know, of me. I can't bear not existing, you know. I can't bear not having me around. So we fill up the present moment with all sorts of stupid things that keep binding us further. And there's really something for me that it's a very present topic for me, this thing. It's always been present, but even more so now, I find. Because I'm much more and more aware of the habit of creating something in the present moment completely unconsciously, rather than being present and knowing that this is enough to respond to life 100%. Not 1% when me is around, but 100%. When me is around, when our limits are around, we only respond from our limits. And the result is limits. You know, if you're going to plant a seed of apple, you're not going to get a melon. If you plant limits in the present moment, that's what you're going to get the next moment. It's hard, isn't it, to understand. And yes, we are all interested in that, aren't we? With the present moment. Our heart will do anything to be there. It'll sacrifice anything to be there. Can you imagine? I mean, look what you do to be in the present moment. Have to listen to talks and have to listen to all that sort of things. It's more present than being in front of a TV screen, sort of watching. I hope you're more present than that. You're not just watching passively, me going, you know, sort of moving around the microphones. I think there's this aspect of really loving the truth and loving this presence of the moment. And just talking about love and presence, everybody smiles and the whole energy of the room has changed already. So, a lot of our learning here in this training, in this community, myself, eventually all of us have come to realize that we need to create limits or boundaries to be able to even go beyond them. more deeply, at a more deeper level, at a deeper level. But it's a conscious thing. It's not unconsciously out of fear. It's out of acknowledging the fact that we may not be able to be the superhuman person that we sometimes imagine ourselves to be, or the all-knowing person that we imagine ourselves to be, or the all-capable person that we imagine ourselves to be. You know. Acknowledging our weakness, acknowledging our helplessness, acknowledging our limitations is a strength. Not a failure. It's a strength. Because once you know once you can hear somebody acknowledging the symptoms of their addiction, then you know they are on the right track. In the same way that once we can acknowledge the fact that there are, you know, there are aspects of ourselves which are truly blind, truly selfish and stupid. We don't need to talk to the whole world about it, just acknowledging ourselves. Then once we look at this from a place of complete, you know, looking at that as mere facts, then we can move beyond it. It's magic. It's like a magic world. You look at your stupidity and you move beyond it. Isn't it amazing? It's really hard, though, isn't it? Because we're very frightened, it's frightening to stop identifying with ourselves. It's very frightening because if there's nothing there to fall back onto or to rest, you know, it's like falling into a big black void. And yet, when you are participating in this process of disidentification or non-identification or non-attachment, moving away from the world of me, mine, desire, wanting all the time, frightened by this or that, then you discover the joy of life, which is you have everything you need. Fear will tell you that if you let go of one small little grumpy mental state, you might lose yourself completely. You will disappear into a void. Isn't it funny? And yet when you are able to do that, you just relax and see that everything is supporting you. Everything is holding you. Everything is receiving you. It's quite extraordinary. When you let go of fear, you find love. Not love as a kind of big emotional kind of thing that's going to come with firecrackers or whatever, you know, sort of rainbows and all the rest of it. It may come like that sometimes. But just a sense of peace. A sense of everything is okay. The world is fine, even with me. Even with me, life is okay. Even with my stupidity, life is perfect. Even my fears belongs to life. Even my ignorance and jealousy belong to life. They're not outside the realm of the living. They are the very part of life, the very texture of life. What makes them frightening, what makes them threatening and challenging is this sticky business of taking ourselves for these little sticky things that just got glued momentarily on the screen of our mind. You know? So, there are many ways to go beyond limits, all the limits we encounter daily in our life. And probably one of the most powerful means to break down those things is to find in our life things that really touch our heart. And sometimes you can't will these things, you know, even though a lot of our, you know, ability to continue in life, to seemingly break through limits, is this kind of strong willfulness, you know, this strong kind of desire to do things, to move away from those limitations. This willfulness is a killer. It's an absolute. It ravages the heart. There's another word. You don't have to completely give up on being willful if you don't want to. If it's your nature, you have to live with it for the next 20 years. But you can find another word which is a bit nicer. It's called determination. Healthy stubbornness. The ability to sustain some good convictions long enough to take you beyond them. So, you don't call them will anymore. You can only let go of convictions by acknowledging them and accepting them and going beyond them, going through them, beyond them. This aspect of devotion, this aspect of love, this aspect of compassion, we all need to develop that profoundly. Because as a great Tibetan teacher said, you know, wisdom tells me I am nothing. Compassion tells me I'm everything. And in between, life flows. You know, because compassion is the opening of the heart. And the heart is neither there, nor here, nor in my toes, no, it's just the heart. It's an experience. And it takes you to this feeling of being connected, not just with little fearful me, but this sense of belonging and being part of and being, you know, enhancing the universe rather than being a stain on this, in this universe, you realize you're enhancing it. Even with your great imperfection, even with all your limits, even with all your miserable walls that you have, you're still enhancing the universe because now you're going to be awake to it. I mean, the enhancement is really, it's a little trick, really. The enhancement is the capacity to look at these things sanely, soundly. The capacity to look at these things fearlessly and compassionately. So, I hope this makes some sense, that this paradox of having to acknowledge your limits to go beyond them has kind of makes some sense. And you remember, if you are part of this practice, if you do developing this the mind through the Buddhist practice, the actual practice itself is our greatest challenge, because it requires us to be totally awake, aware, present, here and now. And remember, our mind has developed incredible strategies to pretend that it's not, to pretend that this here and now doesn't exist. So it's flying off into all directions, right, left and center through our thinking apparatus, and forgets that the keyhole into the whole universal experience is through the present moment. But for our ego, that's a real put down. You know, it feels so miffed. The ego is so miffed as just having to abide with the simplicity of the present moment. So a lot of our practice is dealing with this ego that's rebelling constantly about being in the here and now, rebelling a lot. And people are wonderful. I mean, when you're in communities life, it's wonderful to have people around that keep pointing to you the fact that you are deluded. So when your friends start picking on you and telling you how stupid you are, and you're not present with that very at that very moment, then you should bow to them, really, because they're reminding you you're not present. A lot of the skills of the mind has to do with remembering. Remembering to be present, developing means to be present, strategies to be, if you're going to develop strategies, might as well be strategies that help you, rather than the strategies of delusion, which we're very good at using. And you could say that, just to finish, the greatest limit is believing that we are not boundless. We're not capable of this freedom of the heart. That conviction, that assumption, that belief system that is preventing you from reaping the fruits of this human life, the fruits of joy, of happiness, of lightheartedness, of compassion, of peace, of understanding, of generosity, of all the things in life that makes the heart happy.